there, and welcome back to another episode of Control Alt Thatcher. I'm Tobias. I'm back again with UC. What's up?
Hey, Tobias. I've been detailing, or I think it means finishing up the house. We moved in about 18 months ago, 20 months ago or so, and the house is done. But now that summer is coming, you sort of start looking around and figuring, well, we are missing something in here. We need additional furniture there. That shouldn't be there. Something needs to be attached to the wall. And I've been working on that for the past couple of weeks. I attached the house number. So you have the number or letter of the house that needs to be on the street side. And I've sort of been pushing that off for 18 months, I think, because I didn't want to do that during the winter. And it's been now done. We did a bunch of alpha shelves in the closets. And what's interesting, though, is that when you're done with work for the day and you come home and you do dinner, you maybe do a gym, then you think, well, I'm super exhausted. I don't want to do anything on the house. And there's stuff you need to do. And when you actually get to doing it, you realize, well, this was a five-minute thing. And I've been pushing this off for 2 weeks because I'm exhausted or I'm too busy or something else. So my mental mindset for the past couple of weeks has been that I try to get something done every day. And I plan on continuing like that. How about for you?
So on my side, I've had a cold for about a week that I picked up for my daughters. I've been barely surviving. You know how it can be with a cold. So you'll hear that on my voice today. But around the house, I'm also doing my kitchen renovations. And we're closing in now on the final kind of phase of that, because we had to put it on pause for a little bit. So we've been without a kitchen for a couple of weeks because the delivery, they had some supply chain issues along the way. But finally, we got everything. So off we go.
Sounds cool with the kitchen. Sounds less cool with the flu and everything else. I still do remember when we got started with the podcast and we figured, yeah, let's do like 15 episode backlog and buffer, and everything is done. And now it's like, well, we need an episode today. So regardless of your health, we have to do it now. Okay. Yep. Today, Azure updates. So we take a look at all of the updates that we've found for Azure. And I sort of realized that Microsoft Build is, what, about 3 weeks away from now? So I think Microsoft is sort of saving plenty of the great, big, awesome updates for Build. Regardless, we did find plenty of interesting ones. Probably not too many that will change your thinking in a given service. But let me get started with something interesting, and I would say relatively small, but even more important. And this is something that's generally available now, Virtual Network Flow Logs. And this is part of Network Watcher, and it will allow you to capture IP traffic flow information between your virtual networks. And if you're thinking, well, do I really need this? Yes. Yes, you do. Especially when you're building larger deployments in Azure, you might have multiple or dozens of virtual networks. And then you have NSGs, the rules between those networks. You maybe have Azure Firewall. And then you need to debug somehow. Why is this not connecting with that service in the remote virtual network? And that's when you start looking for virtual network flow logs. You need to visualize, you need to troubleshoot connectivity. You need to record network traffic to figure out what's working, what's not working. How is this traffic flowing? Is it flowing as I intended, or is it flowing somehow differently? So this is now generally available. I think I had a look at this during preview. I don't really need it that often, but when I do need it, that's when I'm happy it's there. So this was my first one. Toby, what do you have on your list?
So I think that's a good one. I've got three updates today. Two are around security. And this first one is about something in preview, which is resiliency review on Azure Advisor. And that's recommendations from the Azure Well-Architected Reliability Review Assessment based on the WAF or well architected framework reliability pillar. That is integrated now in Azure Advisor. It helps you kind of focus on the most important recommendations, and you can triage recommendations, manage the lifecycle on Advisor and things like that. Because traditionally you did the assessment in the assessment portal and you said, hey, I want to do a well-architected assessment, you know, all up the well-architected review, or in this case, the well-architected reliability review to see how reliable are we? You know, are we designing things the right way? Do we have any gaps, any room for improvement? Can we do something differently to kind of increase our score, if you will, on the posture we have for the design architecture for this to make things reliable? That's now integrated into Azure Advisor as an experience. So that is a preview where you get the Azure Well-Architected Reliability Review Assessment integrated, which is pretty great. And I really like how the Well-Architected Framework becomes integrated into the kind of native offering here, which is Azure Advisor. So you can just pick that up, because I've been working a lot with Azure over the years, and I was operating solutions globally in multiple subscriptions all over the place. And these things matter, to have things integrated into the Azure portal, be able to, you know, at your fingertips, just go in and say, all right, we need to click here. We need to get it connected to our resources, get it connected to our team, get it, you know, visible in front of the right people, not just be a disconnected kind of experience on the Learn platform. So this is a super welcome change. And I know customers have been looking for this as well.
I recall we did a reliability pillar episode and a lot of eye-opening stuff in there for me at the time. I haven't realized this is available in Azure Advisor, so I need to have a look at this as well. Next on my list, Azure Classic Networking Services will be retired by end of August 2024. I also recall that we've mentioned the classic Azure Classic Services and maybe the Classic Networking Services a couple of times in the past 3 years or so. And pretty soon, we don't have to mention, because they will be gone. So Classic Application Gateway, Classic Virtual Networks, Classic Reserved IP Addresses, Classic Express Route Gateway, and Classic VPN Gateway. They will be retired for good end of August 2024. So by the time you are listening on this one, it is about 4 months away. I'm super happy that perhaps in my lifetime, we don't have to think or talk about classic stuff anymore. And if I'm thinking, when was the last time I was exposed to any Azure Classic deployments? That was 7 years ago, 6 years ago, I can't even recall. So this is out from my radar already, but I also realize there's probably deployments in production that utilize Azure Classic stuff and Azure Classic networking. And if you're listening on this one and thinking, well, we have that now, this is the absolute last minute to do something to get rid of them. Otherwise, Microsoft will do it for you and you don't have to worry about it after end of August.
Yeah, that's a good advice for you right there to be aware of. You know, time is moving quickly. I think the last classic resources that I came across in production were the web roles and application roles, whatever they were called back then. So the next one on my list is for Microsoft Sentinel. So usually I pick Defender for Cloud or Microsoft Sentinel or relevant security updates. Today I've picked updates from both. So I'm going to start with the Sentinel ones that I think are interesting. And there's a load more updates than the ones I'm mentioning here, but these are kind of the highlights that I liked. So the first one is a preview. That's the Unified Security Operations Platform, which is now in the Microsoft Defender portal. So now you can access the Unified Security Operations Platform in the portal, and that brings you the capabilities from Microsoft Sentinel, Microsoft Defender XDR, and Microsoft Copilot into Defender. And that kind of helps you break down security silos, right, and bring everything into a single pane of glass. It prevents breaches with a better kind of end-to-end visibility for your attack surface. You have automatic attack disruption that can help shut down in-progress attacks, all these things. We know a lot of these capabilities already exist. You know, you kind of get this into a single pane of glass now. So your ability to take action and investigate and respond becomes quicker. In the show notes, I've added the link to the blog post announcement that talks about this in detail, so you understand what it is and why it matters and why you might want to take a look at it. And the next one for Sentinel is in GA, or generally available to everyone right now. That's the CM migration experience. And I want to touch on this because I recently had a conversation with someone who's operating with Splunk. They have a lot of stuff in there. They have incidents, they have alerts, they have, you know, a bunch of observability and security monitoring, you know, tied into Splunk. But they said, we want to move into Sentinel. We want to get over to Microsoft Sentinel because pretty much everything is hosted in Azure anyway. We just want to have everything under the same kind of umbrella. And you can do that now with a CM migration experience in Sentinel, where that helps you kind of automate the process of migrating your security monitoring use cases hosted on a non-Microsoft product, which in this case is Splunk, which is currently the only one supported. And you can migrate that into Sentinel. And essentially what it does, I took a look and did a slight deep dive into it. And it kind of just high level, it translates your Splunk detection rules into Kusto query language, like the love language of Azure, if you will, which is what Sentinel queries are based on as well. So check out the show notes for that. So if you're using Splunk, you're looking to move to Sentinel, take a look at that. That will guide you through that. And the final kind of update around Sentinel is also in GA, or generally available right now. You can go and use this. Amazon Web Services S3 connector. So Sentinel now released the AWS S3 data connector, and that kind of helps you ingest logs from multiple AWS services to Microsoft Sentinel using an S3 bucket, and then the AWS Simple Message Queuing service to make that work. So that's also an interesting one. So if you are a multi-cloud user, a multi-cloud customer, the capabilities to monitor and get insights from a single pane of glass is increasing every day. So I really like these things. You know, it's not just about get everything in Azure, but regardless of where you are, you know, we've got your back. There's going to be security capabilities to make sure we provide all the insights we can to help you stay more secure. And I really like that kind of angle.
Good stuff. I like the CM migration experience for sure. Next on my list, this is something in public preview for Azure OpenAI and Azure AI Search. There's a couple of in-app connectors for logic apps. Sadly, this is only available for standard logic apps, so I'm not sure if this works for the consumption tier as well. The first one on these connectors allows you to connect with Azure OpenAI instance that you're managing to get embeddings or get chat completions based on your input. And the second one is for Azure AI Search for indexing documents and also for doing vector search on documents you have in an Azure AI Search index. Relatively small features, but at least you don't have to do custom HTTP calls now to get this achieved, or you don't have to do plumbing with Azure Functions or custom code or something else to get this up and running. I haven't tried these yet, but I'm sure I will give this a spin. And on this topic as well, another small change, but something I do really welcome, is for Azure AI Search SKUs. So Azure AI Search used to be called Azure Cognitive Search, and it has different tiers. And many times with customers, we are debating, should we go with basic or standard? Because the price difference is quite massive. Basic is about 70 euros per month fixed, and standard is about three times that, so about 250 euro. And the problem has been that with basic, you don't have too much capacity in terms of storage. And these are now raised. So you get six times total storage increase, especially for basic. Double the throughput. And as an example, basic in storage goes from 2 gigabytes to 45 gigabytes for overall content that you would have in your index and in your vectors. This is a very nice addition. And I feel now that Azure AI Search is so popular, especially with Azure OpenAI and AI solutions, that this was bound to happen at some point. Because if you end up paying €70 a month for something and you only get 2 gigabytes of storage, you start questioning that, well, what's the problem here? I would need more storage, but going to more than €200 a month, that's a fairly big investment just to get a little bit more storage. So small changes, but truly welcomed ones.
Yeah, I like these. And on the note of Etra AI services then and cognitive services, let me jump on my next update, which is Defender for Cloud updates. And I just picked some of the interesting ones here. So I'll start with the one where they announced that they're updating the recommendations to align with Azure AI services resources. So there's been several updates to recommendations to align with Azure AI services category. And you may know them, as you mentioned, as cognitive services and cognitive search. And the updates now, that helps comply with the new Azure AI service naming format and aligns with the relevant resources there. So a quick rundown of the relevant changes. I'm not going to go through each rule, but just kind of what happened with the updated rules is it changed from cognitive services accounts should restrict network access. That's a rule example. To Azure AI services resources should restrict network access. And then you think, well, it's just a name change, right? So the name mainly changed with some updated titles and recommendations or to the recommendation. But this might be important because I have seen people make queries and filters in KQL saying, if the rule name is this, or if it contains this, or if it matches this, or says, like, if the title or name contains cognitive services, then you should do X, Y, Z. So if you do have any KQL queries working with the names of any rules and specifically the cognitive services ones and cognitive search, those are changing or like they did change. So they are now Azure AI services instead. So take a look at that. I put the link in the show notes. There's a definition of the exact changes. So if you had this rule name, this is the new rule name. Regardless of that, which is a separate discussion as well, of course, is never make title or name kind of filters in the queries that are important, always tie them to an ID. So the name and titles can change of the rule, but the rule ID remains the same. Now, the final update on my side is also for Defender for Cloud. This is in GA or generally available, so you can go and use it right now. And speaking of multi-cloud that I mentioned before, this is containers multi-cloud recommendations, which exist in Defender for Containers. And Defender for Containers multi-cloud is now GA or, again, generally available. You can go and use it. There's some new recommendations across Azure, GCP, and AWS. So there's also runtime threat detection and agentless discovery for AWS and GCP in Defender for Containers. That also hit GA right now. So you can go and try that out. And again, like I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, if you're a multi-cloud customer, if you do operate across multiple clouds, Microsoft is still doing everything they can to support that journey. Like if you're in AWS and GCP, all good, but you still need security. And this brings everything into your SOC team or your single pane of glass. So you get better visibility into the resources you have, regardless of where they are. So if you're operating containers, distributed across multiple clouds, this is probably something you might want to take a look at to bring better visibility into those resources.
Good stuff. The last one on my list is Windows Server 2025. So I feel this is old news by now because the Windows Server 2024 Summit was maybe 3-4 weeks ago. And Windows Server 2025 is the next version of Windows Server that will become available later this year. I don't think they communicated the exact date. I hope we hear more during build. But an interesting bit on this one that relates to Azure more prominently is that hot patching will be available for Windows Server 2025 anywhere, meaning that when you run Windows updates for Windows Server 2025 virtual machines, you don't need to reboot the machines any longer because you can do hot patching. But now there's a little bit more information what this actually means. And for me, hot patching anywhere means, well, it would work anywhere. And technically, this is true. So hot patching will be available in Azure and Azure Stack HCI, meaning if you're self-hosting an Azure Stack instance with hardware in your data center, yes. But if you're hosting Windows Server 2025, let's say on Hyper-V at home, like I intend to be doing, then you will need Azure Arc and a paid subscription to manage that instance through Azure to get hot patching enabled. And I hadn't realized that hot patching doesn't just work when you spin up a VM. You actually need to get support from Azure through Azure Arc. And I think it's going to be something like €5 per month per device or per VM. So it's not a lot of money perhaps, but it's still something, especially if you have 200 VMs. That adds up quite rapidly to get hot patching. Obviously, you get a lot more, but if you just need hot patching, then keep in mind you will need Azure Arc deployment there as well. There's also a Windows Server Insider program where you can pull in the latest bits now that we are nearing up the final version of that one. Alrighty, these were all the updates we had. Take a look at the show notes. We have links to everything we mentioned in here. The last bit is the unexpected question. Toby, I have prepared a question for you. I trust that you're ready.
I am as ready as I will ever be. Let's go.
Let's go. If animals could drive cars, which animal would make the worst driver and why?
Okay. Couple of options come to mind. An elephant probably is not. But an elephant does have the thing where it can actually probably steer the steering wheel. So I would say sloth. A sloth would probably make the worst driver. You know, not only would they never actually get anywhere on time, just imagine trying to parallel park. You know, it's going to hold off traffic for a year and it might take until the next ice age before they get it right. So I'm probably going to say a sloth is probably the worst driver in the world.
Yeah, I'm definitely buy into this idea. Alrighty. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.
See you then.